Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is stand-up librarian Meredith Myers on behalf of the West Hollywood Book Fair happening October 2nd at the new West Hollywood Library Park. And, you know, today I am joined by an author that I've not only admired for years, you know, not only as like an extraordinary writer, but he is also an advocate for gay rights and a huge supporter of libraries. Everyone, author Christopher Rice. How are you, Chris?
I'm great. How are you, Meredith?
I'm doing fantastic because we have so many exciting things to talk about today, one of them being the opening of this awesome library in West Hollywood that you are on the board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah,
it's like literary season in West Hollywood. We've got the library opening this weekend. Well, we have the ticketed opening night party is happening tomorrow evening, and then next weekend we have the public dedication ceremony that's going to feature Jackie Collins as a guest speaker. And then the day after that opening is the West Hollywood Book Fair. So there's a lot going on in a town that often doesn't have a reputation for being very literary.
And that's why you and I are probably exhausted, because we're like seizing this opportunity to talk about books and to talk about literacy and all of those type of things. And, you know, Chris, another thing that was exciting this week, which I'm sure you're thrilled about, I've seen you tweeting about it and whatnot, was the whole repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell military policy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was happy to announce that the repeal turned one of my novels into historical fiction, Blind Fall. Blindfall, which I published in 2008, was a murder mystery about a gay Marine. Well, it was about a straight Marine who discovers that the comrade who saved his life in Iraq was gay only after that Marine is brutally murdered back home here in the States. And he and his sort of secret male lover that he kept from all his fellow Marines, kept a secret, I should say, they have to team up to find out who did it. But the book was very much informed by the environment that existed in the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and you know, I'm very happy that it's been repealed in that environment. Maybe it's too soon to say it's no more, but it's certainly on its way out.
Absolutely, and I think there was even a big event in West Hollywood. I think I saw the city of West Hollywood. There was a big group of people that came out to support this decision. And gosh, I don't know. It's just an exciting time all week. It's such great news.
It is. It's wonderful news. One of the exciting things for me, too, is that I was finally able to publicly acknowledge the Marines who had helped me write the book. I had used several gay. They were open with me about being gay, and they were research consultants for the 2 years that I was writing Blind Fall. And because Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still in effect when I published the book, on the acknowledgments page, I said something very simple like, I would like to thank the many Marines who helped me with the research of this book, but unfortunately they're gay, so I can't name them, otherwise they might be discharged. So the minute the repeal went into effect, I reached out to them and said, is it all right if I recognize you by name on my Twitter feed and on Facebook, on my Facebook fan page? And they agreed, and one of them was Captain Matthew Phelps, who has been a friend for many years and is now able to sort of publicly talk about a lot of things that he just couldn't talk about before. It's amazing the instantaneous effect of it in that regard, in terms of what conversations we can have. I do think we're going to have a journey in this area. I don't think the climate inside the military will be halcyon for right away. I think there will be bumps along the road. I think there will be an adjustment period. But I think at the same time, we're going to see that in certain quarters inside the military, things were a lot better than we thought they were. I think we'll see that the attitudes about homosexuality within the military are as generational as they are in the outside world, which means older commanding officers may have a bigger issue with this than the younger enlisted men and women may.
And, you know, it's this whole topic, I think, is also great, I guess, timing, if I could say that, if that's the right word, is that the in the library field, Banned Book Week actually starts tomorrow and runs mm-hmm. through October 1st. And a lot of times there are LGBT books that are often on that list where people go into the library and say, you know what, I don't want this book on the shelves. Some of the books that I've been big fans of, actually, there's a book called Entango Makes Three that is often on a banned book list, as well as The Chocolate War and Running with Scissors by Augustine Burroughs. Have you ever, in any of your books, dealt with censorship or people trying to ban your books?
You know, I have not, and it's surprising to me. I've dealt with really nasty emails. I've dealt with homophobia. I've never dealt with an organized effort to ban any of my books, or I just simply haven't been made aware of one. I think probably the closest I came to that, and I was in the pot with a lot of other authors on this one, was this sort of inexplicable event that happened with Amazon.com several years ago, where I think it was thousands of gay and lesbian titles, or titles that had been tagged as LGBT interest, simply disappeared from their searches. They were listed on the site, but they wouldn't show up if you did a search for the other categories they would fall under for the author's name. And it was a pretty scary and infuriating, I think it was about 72 hours that this lasted, because at the time I was working with an organization that was very actively involved in LGBT literature. I'm not with them anymore, but at the time we were trying to sort of lead this charge because we couldn't get an answer from Amazon about why this had happened. And so it looked, for all intents and purposes, like it was calculated homophobia. It looked like somebody had altered the search algorithm on the site. And I am an Amazon customer. I own a Kindle. I think Amazon has done some amazing things, and I think they've done some damaging, not so amazing things, and I think they need to act responsibly in the marketplace. But we didn't get it. We never got a specific answer from them about what truly happened, and they didn't do a good job of communicating with the community and their customers during that 72-hour period. So that was probably the closest I've ever come to feeling banned or attacked. But, you know, I've benefited from generational advances in this area. I'm not dealing with the same level of homophobia that John Retchie dealt with, or even Felice Picano and Edmund White and Andrew Holleran and all those guys dealt with in the beginning, and Rita Mae Brown. My first book, or my first two books, were met with a more openly gay, vibrant community of young people who were very hungry for them. And obviously the fact that I had a famous last name attached to the project allowed publishers, or made them feel safe to take the risk to market them outside of just the gay community.
And one thing that's really great about this new library that we're both opening, I'm a volunteer there, is that this new West Hollywood library is actually going to house an expansive collection of LGBT materials. And for people that aren't familiar, what LGBT means is lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And it's going to have a variety of literature and history, and basically it's going to be a circulating collection, and it's going to be available on the shelves as opposed to then having to ask the librarians about that. Is there anything further that you could talk about regarding that collection?
Well, that to me is the single most important offering that libraries have for not just the LGBT community, but any minority community. You know, that like the loftiest goal with a library is that it's going to ensure equal access to information to all members of your community. It doesn't guarantee them the right to own that information for free, but it ensures them access to it. I mean, libraries are something that Benjamin Franklin believed were intrinsic to the founding of this country. And there's been a lot of sort of dismissive, cavalier talk about the relevance of libraries in the age of Kindle. Well, the relevance of this library in West Hollywood has to do largely with the fact that a very large, or sizable, I should say, percentage of our population makes under $20,000 a year. They will likely be the people that can't afford the latest digital whirligig handheld devices. They may not have a Kindle or an iPad. They certainly didn't have a Kindle before the price dropped to $130. And libraries will not only guarantee them access to printed material, but they'll guarantee them access to computer access to the web as well, which is particularly important when people are looking for work, as many of them are currently. Imagine trying to find a job without going online these days. But to get back to your original question, this is the only LGBT collection that I'm aware of in the Los Angeles County library system that's going to be OpenStack, as you said. It's going to be circulating. And, you know, I would love to take credit for this assessment of the importance of libraries to gay people, but it was really Dorothy Allison, who wrote Bastard Out of Carolina, who said it the best. She and I spoke at a conference of librarians many years ago, and she described the journey of that young gay person in a community that was probably hostile and unaccepting, a community where maybe they were closeted. She described what their outlets would be, what their access to information that would convince them not to kill themselves would be. Would that be at the bookstore where they would feel the pressure to make a purchase, or somebody would literally sort of be looking over their shoulder to make sure they didn't slip anything in their backpack? No, it would be the library. The library would be the place where they could explore the stacks. Nobody would be breathing down their necks. They would have access to information about people who had managed to escape hostile communities like that, who had managed to find acceptance and community and medical professionals who advise them on good health choices. All of that was happening at the library, and I think it's still happening at the library. A lot of people, they want to say, well, in the internet age, so many of these young people are going to have a computer at home. Well, that's maybe true, but, you know, parents who are unduly homophobic can put filters on a computer that treat all gay and or LGBT websites as pornographic or adult-oriented material. We still need a public space. And then they say, well, yeah, but this library is in the middle of West Hollywood, which is this vibrant community. And I said, yeah, but West Hollywood is a vibrant community because it draws young gay people from Bakersfield and from other parts of the Central Valley that may be very, very sort of intolerant towards differences. So, you know, I think the purpose of it, you know, you can retell that story to any sort of lost young person who feels they're suffering from anything that has a stigma associated with it that they want information about, if it's medical, if it's personal, if it's psychological, all of their help, all of their best assistance, judgment-free, is going to be in the library.
I agree, and I think all libraries are important, obviously, but just because the two of us are involved in this particular library, it's just, I was just in there yesterday, and it's extraordinary. I'm so inspired when I walk in there, not just because it's LEE decertified, which is environmentally sound and whatnot, but it's just, there's a coffee shop there, there's the whole ceiling is bamboo, the study room, it's like all glass. It's like it's gorgeous. I mean, the view and the light. Have you been in there lately?
I'm looking forward to tomorrow night because I was in there on a hard hat tour many months ago, and a lot has been done since then, and I've sort of been building up. You were very kind to post a Twitter picture of the donor recognition wall, which has my name on it, which I haven't actually seen in person yet, so I'm very excited based on your photo.
I felt bad. I didn't want to spoil the surprise.
No, I was very
excited to see your name on there because you've done so much for this library.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it's been an interesting road. You know, it has not been the easiest sell for a lot of people, primarily because of the things we just talked about. Publishing is going through major transitions, and what happens is the people who are the most privileged in that scenario think that these transformations are happening all the way down the ladder, and they're really not. And it's important that we have these public spaces. But honestly, as a resident of West Hollywood now for 10 years, I wanted there to be a nice, beautiful public space that wasn't a bar. You know, I have nothing against bars, but I'm not at a point in my life where I visit them very frequently anymore, and I don't rely on them for meeting people or the way I used to. And I want there to be a town hall and a public space where people of all ages can commingle, and there isn't the dunkle, 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 you know, constantly in the background, and it doesn't stink like booze.
And then, and that's my perspective also on a comedy perspective, because I quit drinking myself a little while ago, and you know, people always ask me, oh, when can I see you perform at a comedy club? I've done the comedy clubs, and the thing is, it's like, you know, that's fine, it's my bread and butter in a way, you're performing comedy clubs, but libraries are such a welcoming environment. There's not the pressure to drink, there's not the pressure of, okay, there's a, you know, cover charge plus a 2-drink minimum type mentality, because it's like, I've had tough time trying to get a library job. I don't always have money to spend. I can't afford
right.
to go see myself perform. So that's why
right.
I kind of went to the library, because it's a place for everyone. And, you know, this new library has such a variety of spaces for performances and for story time. I mean, I can't get over this children's theater that is going to be, it's based on a Michelangelo design. And I can't wait to read books in there to kids. And then the city council has a whole chamber room and a theater. And I'm like, wow, okay, I hope I can do a big show in there sometime soon. Hint, hint, people. But one thing we must talk about is writing and books, because obviously we are both going to be at this West Hollywood Book Fair on October 2nd, which is taking place at this new library park. Now, Chris, you've got your best-selling author. A Density of Souls, the Snow Garden, Light Before Day. Obviously, we've talked about Blindfall, The Moonlit Earth, which was last year, and then now you've just completed a book called, it's called The Heavens Rise. Is that correct?
I have, and I would say it's almost complete. What I've completed is a first draft, and I distributed it to some friends for early reads, and I've gotten notes back now from them, so I'm literally poised to begin on a rewrite before I send it to my agent. It is my first supernatural horror novel, and my experience with that is never say never when people ask you what you're going to write next, because I said I would never write another book set in New Orleans, because I put the city through such hell in my first one. And I said I would never write anything supernatural because of the obvious comparisons to my mother, Anne Rice. So I did both of those things, you know. And what happened was I got an idea. And when you get an idea, you know, good luck getting rid of it. If you're anything like me, if an idea really gets in your craw, it's not going to be very willing to step aside because of some reasons manufactured by your ego about how this may make you look in the marketplace. So, you know, it took me a long time to research it. It was an idea that changed form. The characters in it, the ensemble of characters stayed the same, but the intricacy of the plot and the general thrust evolved over time, and I did a lot of research because it was necessary for me to go back and have a real experience of post-Katrina New Orleans, because I moved, after living in the city for 15 years, I moved out, oh gosh, I guess about 6 or 7 years before Katrina hit, and it has altered the landscape and on every level, you know, emotional, psychological, spiritual, physical. And there was no writing a book about it just from a distance. I couldn't just talk to friends and read a bunch of books. So I spent a lot of time there. I went out on the river with a riverboat pilot, because one of the major characters is going to be a bar pilot on the Mississippi River. Those are the local guys that you have to use when ships come through to dock at port. And I got to know New Orleans again. I had always thought if I did do another New Orleans book, it would be different in tone from my first one. My first one was written when I was 22 years old. I had a whole passel of resentments then that I don't necessarily have today. I'm a bit older, and I hope a bit more mature. And so I wanted a different eye on the city this time out. And that's what's in The Heavens Rise. But I also wanted to write a really juicy, great horror thriller like, this type of book I think was more popular in the 80s with Robert McCammon and Stephen King, the sort of multi-character kind of small town gathers together to ward off a very dangerous threat.
And, you know, you had a little contest or a bet that if you had a certain number of followers that you would put some pages on your Tumblr, which, of course, I went on there and read. And, obviously you're introducing a lot of the characters. But I couldn't help but notice the last chapter there kind of talked about a diamond-backed water snake and a water moccasin. And I'm just starting to wonder if maybe that's the supernatural part of it. There's something, I don't know.
I
want to
reveal it. It's so funny. I cackled because earlier on in my life on Twitter, and my handle is Chris Rice Writer, if anyone is interested, but I promised my followers at the time that if I crossed a certain threshold, I think it was maybe 2,000 followers, that I would post a picture of myself not wearing pants, I think was how I phrased it.
Oh, my gosh.
And I immediately did this and thought, oh, no, what have I done? This is going to ruin my career, blah, blah, blah. So when I got there, I kept my word, and I posted a picture of myself in a sundress. Yeah. So that was my first big Twitter contest. The second was, yes, if I crossed another threshold of followers, I posted what's really the first half of the novel's first section. The novel has about 4 or 5 parts. And yeah, there is a snake. A snake plays a very pivotal role in the story, but I will not reveal at this time if that snake is the source of the supernatural force in the book.
All right. Well, you can't. You know, I try. I always try to find out.
As a good interviewer should.
And a huge fan, which I am.
Yes.
And you know, you did mention your mother, Anne Rice, and you know, I've. Oh, my gosh, she's my favorite writer and has been since, you know, I was a kid. And I lived in, I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, and we had the huge Miami Book Festival there. And
yeah.
So I would convince my mom and dad to drive me down because your mother was there one year. And it was ridiculous. We were standing out in the heat. I think it was all day long. And I have to say, I mean, your mother could sign. She, you know, usually authors will give a limit on how many books they'll sign, you know. But she
mm-hmm.
stayed there until she had signed every single one. And she's just a remarkable woman. And I always, you know, having grown up reading her books, I always wanted to go to New Orleans. And I tell you, I went to New Orleans for my 30th birthday, finally, and just was there for 2 weeks. And, you know, I went to that little garden bookshop, the Garden District Bookshop.
Oh, yeah, Garden District Bookshop is our,
you know,
is our place.
Exactly, but since I hadn't, you know, purchased any, I already had all of your mother's books, of course. But, you know, the book that I did buy, Chris, I bought yours.
Oh, cool.
I bought
Thank
yours
you.
Because it was, and it was signed. And that's what's interesting. I can't believe that now, years later, you know, we're opening this library together. I mean, back then, I never expected I'd ever end up being a librarian. And more, I would never expected that I would be speaking with you on the phone and working with you to open this library. And it's just, your family is extraordinary. And, of course, your father, extraordinary poet and painter. Now, speaking of your mother, with this event we've got tomorrow night, there's a couple auction items, and there's one in particular I was very interested in that has to do with your mother. Do you want to tell everybody about it?
Absolutely. She threw a very popular, very large costume ball years ago called the Memnock Ball in New Orleans, and people will often approach me and say, I went to your mother's Halloween party in New Orleans, and often it was not actually a party that my mother threw. It was a party the Vampire Lestat fan club threw. But this was her party, and it took up all of St. Elizabeth's, which was a former orphanage that she owned for many years, which people thought we lived there, but we didn't. But it was like an event space, and it had a chapel in it. And this party was just completely over the top and wonderful. She wore to the party a custom-made black Chinese wedding dress, and it was interesting because when she contacted a local dressmaker in New Orleans and asked them to contact these Chinese women in China who make these dresses, and she said, I want to custom make one in black. And initially the Chinese dressmakers refused to do it because they thought it would be bad luck, so it took a great deal of convincing, but they eventually agreed. The dress is gorgeous. It's in mint condition. We are auctioning off not only the dress, but the people who buy the dress get a 20-minute meet and greet with my mother out in the desert in Palm Springs. I believe the package also includes accommodations overnight in Palm Springs, and she will literally give you the dress and, you know, share some coffee or tea with you while she does.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. I need a new dress. So
this is quite a dress. The funny thing is that I've had this dress in my house for a couple years, and they just came and picked it up yesterday, and we were oohing and aahing over it because I really only think she wore it once because, I mean, it is in sterling condition. There is not a bead mm-hmm. missing, and it also comes with a gorgeous feathered headdress.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm not sure how long she actually wore the feathered headdress at the party. I think she lost that one after about 5 minutes because it was so big. But that is included in the auction.
All right. And people, you know, that are listening, you can still attend this event because, again, the money is all going to fund this amazing library. And tickets are available at the door. But if you want more information about that, you could certainly go to the website weholibraryfund.org. That's weholibraryfund.org. And you can still donate to the library as well. So if you're not in town or you can't make it to this event tomorrow night, you could certainly go on that website and donate to the library, buy yourself a bookshelf, sponsor the children's theater. You know, you could somebody out there, you could call it Stand Up Librarian, Meredith Myers Children's Theater, whatever you want to do, it's fine. So that's tomorrow night. And then, of course, we have the opening of the library to the public on October 1st. And you mentioned it kind of in your intro there about Jackie Collins is going to be there. Is that correct?
Yeah, she will be speaking.
So that's
where
that's
my all I know
here.
About that.
Oh, okay, all right, now I'll keep going.
No, it should
then.
Be great. It's a ceremony that's open to the public, and I think she's the sort of celebrity guest author who will be speaking. And I think that is when the library will officially open its doors, as soon as that ceremony is complete.
Absolutely, and I think the activities are all around 10 to 2, and there's different things going on there. I'll certainly be there, of course, giving tours or telling jokes or doing whatever I can do for the library. But just to close things off here, once again, the West Hollywood Book Fair, which is happening October 2nd, you're going to be on a panel there in the Mystery and Suspense Pavilion, and the panel that you're going to be on is called Writing and Selling the LGBT Crime Novel, Should the Label Even Matter? And that's from 2:30 to 3:30, and then you're going to be doing a signing, I guess, at 3:30. Can you tell me a little bit about that panel and what you think you might address to get people excited about it?
Well, it is the question for any writer who is gay. You know, does that label matter? What does that label mean if it matters? You know, but does calling your book a gay book automatically mean you've not written anything or put anything in that book that is of relevance to straight people? It's a sort of unresolvable discussion that makes for good conversation, is how I would put it. And in the crime world, you know, there have been, in my opinion, some pretty fantastic advances in acceptance and tolerance. I mean, like, we had really major best-selling crime writers who weren't gay, including really great gay characters in their books early on. Jonathan Kellerman is the example that comes to mind. His recurring character, Alex Delaware, Delaware's sidekick, was an openly gay homicide detective, Milo Sturgis, and I remember reading about Milo years ago before I had ever thought of writing a true crime novel. So it's an interesting conversation with a lot of different sides, and it's one of those conversations that engages the audience, because usually the audience has to come with an answer to what that question means. They're usually the ones the writers want to hear from. What does a gay book mean to you? How do you define a gay book? And it's like the one true God. You know, nobody's definition is ever the same. So it's a fun discussion.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll be on the I'll be the MC of the VATS Entertainment stage from 10 to 2, and then I'm going to have some time, and I'm going to head over to sit in on your panel and hear what you guys have to say there. And then at my performance, I'm actually performing at the end, and I'm at the theater stage, and I believe I'm at 5:25. So if anybody is still around, please stay to hear some jokes and a whole literary comedy set. I'd like to thank my guest, Christopher Rice, an extraordinary person in so many ways, and I'm so glad we've gotten to know each other over, you know, just in working with this library. And I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at this event.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Of course. And, of course, anybody out there listening, please go to Chris's website. It's ChristopherRiceBooks.com. And my website is StandUpLibrarian.com. And, of course, any of the information that you've heard today about the West Hollywood Book Fair, there's so many other artists and artists, authors. There's plenty of entertainment for kids and teens. So everybody come out. It's a family event. You could go to WestHollywoodBookFair.org. And then, obviously, it's very important for Chris and I that, you know, you donate to this West Hollywood Library Park. So you can go to WeHoLibraryFund.org. Again, Christopher, it's been great, and thank you so much for calling in and doing such wonderful things for libraries.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Mary.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.
What's up, man?
Hey, yo, what's up?
What's going on, yo? Sick and tired of 5-0 running up on the block, you know what I'm saying? Yo, so they came around looking for you the other day.
Word,
bust it.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. Ali keep on bum bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, I'm stumble down the lane. Ali keep on bum bam. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. Ali keep on bum bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, I'm stumble down the lane. Ali keep on bum bam. These are the men who come in and they blow down my door. Rainy car part through my window, so they put me in the back of the car at the station. From that point, summer is my destination. Where the destination is in out of easy tension. Where the look down my pants, look up my bottom. So informer, you know, say that I'm a snowman, I go glam. I like it boom boom damn. Take the man that say that I'm a snowman, stop somewhere down the lane. I like it boom boom damn. Informer, you know,
say that I'm a stormy, I go blame. I keep on bum down. Take the man that say that I'm a stormy, stand some more than a lame. I keep on bum down. So big on the mind, they think they have more power. They want to pull me, they want to wall me. For what they use it once, and now me call me lover. Love who will be calling on the one tell me. I me love you in my heart down to my belly. You say that I'm a stormy, I be cool and deadly. It's the one MC Shan and the one that is low. Together we all have a Mr. Tornado Informer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep on boom bam. Take the man that say that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep on boom bam. Informer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep on boom bam. Take the man that say that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep on boom bam. So, listen for me, you better listen for me, no. Listen for me, you better listen for me, no. Bring me the rubber, the light, the phone, the rock, and stay. You say that I'm a stormy, I the art to go down. But I'm not in and out of the dance, I miss the way I come from. People them say you come from Jamaica, but me born and raised in Connecticut, don't know what else you know. Few brown people, man, is all a man know. Yeah, me shoes and them tear up and me toes just a show. For me, I'm born in all the ones around, so, so informer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep boom boom down. Take the man that thinks that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep boom boom down. Informer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep boom boom down. Take the man that thinks that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep boom boom down. Come with a nice young lady. Intelligent, yes, she's young, calling Ari. Everywhere me go, me never left for a tally. You say that it's snow me, I the rum dance man. Rum is in a dance, I lay in a nation. You never know, say that I'm a snow me, I the boom shack. I tell me never lay it down flat, and now I'm can't board down flat. You say that I'm a snow me, I go region at a drop. So informer, you know, say that I'm a snow me, I go blam. I keep boom boom down. Take the man that say that I'm a snow me, start somewhere down the lane. I keep boom boom down. Informer. You know, say that I'm a show me, I go blam. I keep on boom down. Take the man that say that I'm a show me, start somewhere down the lane. I keep on boom down. Why worry? Why worry?
Why worry? Sitting around cool with my dibby dibby girl. Police knock my door, lick up my pal. Rough me up and I can't do a thing. Pick up my line when my telephone ring. Take me to the station, black up my hand. Trail me down cause I'm hanging with the snowman. What I'm gonna do, I'm backed in a trap. Slap me in the face, took all of my gas. They have no clues and they wanna get warmer. But Sham won't turn informer.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep on boom down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep on boom down. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I keep on boom down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, start somewhere down the lane. I keep